Cheshvan Tavshin Samachay, 17th of October 2004, Sunday morning, Northampton Kollel, Shir, begin introduction to Tehillim and first chapter Tehillim. Right, starting with an introduction to David HaMelech, and I think you children might have heard some of this at home at some time, but it's good chazor even this. David HaMelech was this king over Klal Yisrael. He had a very, very tragic life, very difficult life. Melech in Yerushalayim, Melech first of all in Hebron for 7 years, as I remember, then Melech in Yerushalayim for 33 years, I think. Yes, totaling 40 years altogether. Chazal tell us David as a person was destined almost not to be born at all, or to die at birth. Adam Arishan, we just learned Parshas Bereishis, you've learned in Parshas Bereishis now. Yeah, Adam Arishan decided to give up his years of his life to David, and he devoted 70 years of his life to David. David indeed lived for 70 years altogether. As a result of that, Adam, who was destined to live for 1,000 years, ended up living for 930 years. So the last 70 years he gave away to David. Having some sort of nevuah that David was going to be this great tzaddik and leader. But David's life is a very sad life, very tragic life. He was the son of Yishai. I'm sure it's not relevant, but I find it interesting that both the word Yishai and the word David are both palindromes. Not palindromes, yeah. Palindromes. Yes. That's it. Yishai is the father of David, is Yud Shirin Yud, and David is Dalet Vav Dalet. So they're both palindromes. I don't know if it's relevant, I'm sure it isn't. Yishai descended from Yehuda. Yishai is one of the people, he's given a nickname in Chazal, and the nickname is Nachash, serpent. The reason why Yishai is called a Nachash is almost like a nickname. I think there's a pasuk which refers to him as Nachash as well. And the reason for that is, say Chazal, it's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun on the base. I'll read that. Yishai meis be'etov shel Nachash. Yishai died only because of the workings, the chait, yeah, etov. I can't quite remember what the word etov really means. The operation or the actions of the snake. The original Nachash at the time of Adam and Chava, you're learning about Adam and Chava, yeah? Because of that, therefore, Gezerah of death came to the world. Is it Sanhedrin as well? I've got a note here from Shabbos and then here on the base. It maybe will be in Sanhedrin too. There were four people who died, not because of the Chatoim. It seems in the Gemara that most people die as a result of their Averis. They do a certain number or a certain type of Averis, and the Chakosh Baruch Hu says that's it, and as a result of that, it's time now for the person to depart from this world. But there were four people who died solely because Chakosh Baruch Hu decreed at the time of Adam and Chava and the Nachash that death must exist in the world. And they were Yishai and Binyamin and Kiriov, that's one of the sons of David. Oh yeah, and Amram, thank you, yeah, Amram, Moshe's father, Amram, that's it, those are the four. So Yishai, father of David, got this nickname of Nachash because he only died as a result of the Nachash, as a result of the Gezerah of death.
So it's nickname after, what's the nickname while
he was
alive? Presumably, because he didn't know that. Say that
again?
After his death.
Ah, yeah, probably. Interesting. So the psukim about him would be written maybe with a sense of nevuah.
I see.
I imagine.
Nachash is quite derogatory.
But here it has the opposite effect. It's yes. Given covered that he only died because of the Nachash. Otherwise, he would never have died.
But you say Adam was destined to die at 1,000.
Yeah.
So how do you say he would never have died?
No idea. No, I really don't know how you can exactly quantify that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got certain lifespans mapped out for people, yeah, which apparently can change depending on the person's madriga.
Well, the person could live forever.
No, the person could not live forever because the Torah says that.
But mankind was always destined to die at 1,000 maximum.
No, Adam himself, the original Adam, he was allotted at some stage of time. Yeah, because, I'll tell you why, because the pasuk says, Ki v'yom achol chonimenu. Ki v'yom achol chonimenu most Thomas. On the day that you, on the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, then on the day that you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you'll die. he ate from the Eitz Hadas, but he didn't die on that day. He survives for a total of 930 years. The day is the day as defined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's days, which is given from a pasuk in Tehillim, Kiela Shonim Be'enecha Kiyom Esmo, 1,000 years in your eyes are Kiyom Esmo, like one day. Therefore, Adam was given a lifespan of 1,000 years, of which he devoted 70, gave away 70 for Dovetail.
Of the
end
of the end. Otherwise, he would have lived forever.
Yes.
So he says, how can he do all of this? He's got to do, he's going to be a king, he's got to do the foundations of the temple, etc. He says, I'll give 70 years of my life and he'll be able to achieve it there. And then when it came to the end of the night, and they got the angels to act as Aiden because they said, and they drew up a star. And when it came to it, Akash Baruch said, come on, you're 930 years old. Oh, no, I've got 1,000 years because it's quite supposed to. Oh, no, they have to get, they've got the Aiden, book up the star, December. And they have to say, well, okay, that's the reason. And at the time, he thought, oh, well, I've got 1,000 years, 70 is nothing. But when it came to be 929, three-quarter years old, and he knew his time was, he was reminded what was going on, and he realised how precious the time was. And that, so sometimes you think time is precious, and then that's what I said when I was crossing the Euphrates with the rock. And he was destined to have 1 week, and Adam Rishon said he can't achieve everything he's meant to that week, that was the year.
But he didn't live 70 years in a week.
No, it's inclusive of exactly 70 years.
70 years, yeah, because he was born and died on Shabbos.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, the Gemara says he wanted to know when he was going to die, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, I'm not prepared to tell you, I'll just give you the day of the week that's going to be on a Shabbos. So David learned every day, all day, he learned every Shabbos for the full duration of Shabbos. And the understanding that if a person is learning Torah, then the Malach HaMavis can't have any effect on him. And every Mitzvah Shabbos he made a celebratory meal because he knew he had now at least one more week to survive. He'd been told he could die on a Shabbos, so he had at least another week to live. And on Mitzvah Shabbos, the Malach Malka, one of the Zemiris, the Malach Malka says, Dohi Su'udah Slavda David Malka Mishifra. This is the Su'udah of David HaMelech, because he made a special Malach Malka every Mitzvah Shabbos. And when his time came, the Malach Malka had to disturb his learning by making a noise in the trees, and that's interrupted his learning, and in that moment when he stopped learning, so the Malach Malka could take him. The life of David itself is a tragic life. Personally, full of tragedies. I've jotted down some of them, and it's literally from memory, and I'm sure I've missed lots of them out. For start, he suffered from Shaul's jealousy of him. Shaul did become jealous of him. Very strange. After David killed Goliath, and then David was given all this tremendous luxuries, his family were exempt from the national taxation, and he was given the king's daughter to marry. That was Michal, the daughter of Shaul, because Shaul was the melech at that time. So he had all these, and life went wonderfully for him. He became the head of the army, and as head of the army, his success very much eclipsed the success of Shaul. And people started talking about it. Yidden we talk, yeah.
So,
yeah, that's right. I've written it down here. So it's a pasuk. It's Shmuel Aleph, isn't it? Hikar Shaul ba'alofov, the David b'rivavosov. This is what people are talking. Shaul has smitten our enemies in their thousands. Ba'David b'rivavosov, in the tens of thousands. He was such a successful leader. And that made Shaul somehow jealous of David. I hasten to add that Shaul was one of the world's greatest tzaddikim. I emphasize that because Shaul is probably one of the most misunderstood people in Tanakh. He was undoubtedly a tzaddik, a huge tzaddik. He had a few things went wrong in his life. He had a number of incidents that were problems where he did indeed make the wrong decisions and did certain averis for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished him terrifically heavily. HaKadosh Baruch Hu only punishes really, really heavily for the great tzaddikim if they go wrong. Medakdik in tzaddik of kechut asara, you know, down to the hair's breadth if a tzaddik does something wrong. So Shaul had this sort of jealousy of David,
and ultimately it gave Shaul a terrible depression. So David was the son-in-law of Shaul, yet Shaul was jealous of him, and gave Shaul certain depressions, and David himself would come along to the royal palace and play music to lift Shaul's spirits. However, with all of that, one of the big major turning points in Shaul's life was after he didn't fulfill to the letter of the law when he fought against Amalek. He'd been told to wipe out Amalek, this big battle against Amalek, everybody's got to go, Timchei Secha Amalek, men, women, children, all has got to go, animals as well. And Shaul had this cheshbon, and a very good cheshbon that it was. He had a cheshbon that said, no, I will, I'll kill the men because the men are fighters, but why should I kill the women? The women, they're not fighters, what have they done wrong? Well, I'm not going to kill the women. And the animals, he actually used the animals for karbonus. So he had this very good cheshbon. The only thing was, it wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu's instructions. His instructions, via Shmuel HaNavi, was to kill them all. So Shaul had his own ideas, good ideas, but misguided. He didn't wipe out the Amalek, and with that he lost the Melucha. Shmuel appointed David instead, and Shaul never accepted the fact that his son-in-law David was now the new Melech. That led to one of the world's most tragic misunderstandings between Shaul and David, both of whom were tzaddikim. Shaul viewed David as a Merid B'Malchus, as a traitor. And there's a halacha that a Merid B'Malchus is Chav Nisa, and a king has a right to kill. Shaul was from Binyamin, yes.
So the Malchus can never stay with him.
Yeah.
The
one off. Shaul couldn't accept that. And Shaul never really accepted that he was no longer the king and that his son-in-law David was the new king. And David's going around behaving like a king, and people are speaking to him as the king, so therefore he's a Merid B'Malchus, he's a traitor, he's Chav Nisa. And as a result of that, Shaul made various attempts on David's life, Nebuch, and he chased him through the deserts, and David spent years on the run. As he's a king, he's on the run, living out in caves in the desert, on the run, and what kind of, no palaces, no chariots, but a fugitive, Nebuch, for his life. That's how Shaul viewed it.
Yeah,
it was a secret. I want to hear your comments on the tape.
It was a secret anointing, it wasn't a public anointing.
It was a secret anointing, that's true. So Shaul never really accepted it, yeah.
And he probably didn't even know. So he thought he's rightfully the king still.
So he never accepted David's
Mashmur. Shmuel Navi didn't even know who David was.
That's right, yeah.
He went over his brothers. First.
That's right, yeah.
But when Shem showed that this is David Melech, he's the new Melech, surely Shul must have realized if the Navi was telling him that Hashem has taken your kingdom from you, he's given it, and he didn't accept the Navi was telling him.
He couldn't accept it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he had his own personal...
what's the word? It's a horrible...
Maybe
that
the
Navi
was a
poetry
Navi.
That's a big daring thing to say. I haven't seen that anywhere. But whatever it was, Shaul couldn't quite accept it.
Maybe he was no longer a tzaddik at that time, because he went to the double witches, if you remember.
Even with all of that, I tell you, I've got a lovely sefer at home, very small, thin sefer, that's jam-packed full of midrashim, all about Shaul. Someone, one of the Gedolim in Israel, I can't remember his name, collected together all midrashim, all about Shaul, and he published them in the sefer. It's called Shaul Bechir Hashem. There's a pasuk which says Shaul Bechir Hashem, Shaul, the chosen one of God. Shaul was this great, great tzaddik. And you see these midrashim about Shaul, what a great tzaddik he was. So that's why I emphasize his tzidkus, because he's really misunderstood. After the Melchama against Amalek, consulting the witches, and he killed off the Kohanim in the town of Nov, Novir HaKohanim. So all these black marks against his character, but notwithstanding all of that, he was a great, great tzaddik with all of that. So you have this strange relationship between David and Shaul. Eventually they made their shalom, they made peace between them. David, of course, had this opportunity to kill Shaul. David's nephew, Yoav, said to David, here he is, and he found Shaul asleep, and he had an opportunity to kill him, and Yoav, Jury saw this, and shall I kill him? And David said, under no circumstances, he's Mashiach Hashem, he's anointed, he's a tzaddik, he mustn't kill him. And so he didn't kill him, he cut off the corner of his cloak,
and to, as a simon to Shaul, he wanted to make Shaul, and he suffers in later life, yeah, at the beginning of Melachim Aleph, in later life, he suffered from cold in school. If I ever see coats on the floor, and I see them every day on the floor, I say to the boys, you know, David was punished for not respecting clothing. Yeah? David didn't respect the clothing of Shaul, and suffered by being cold. When he was an elderly man, he suffered in the cold, and no amount of clothing, he couldn't stay warm. Okay. Let's come on to some of the tragedies of David's own life. No, let's leave that for a minute. Let's first go into the background of David's life. Rabbeinu Bachai, in Parshas Vayeshev, where you have the Maisa of Yehuda and Tamar, and Tamar gives birth to twins, Peretz and Zerach. And on that parasha, because Peretz is the ancestor of David, there's a long piece of Rabbeinu Bachai mapping out the Malchus of Yehuda. So first of all, he gives all the generations. I'll actually read out the names just for the sake of completeness, and you'll know a lot of the names. Going from Avraham, you've got Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yehuda. Then from Yehuda, the lineage of the Malchus came through Peretz, Chetzron, Rom, Aminodov, Nachshon ben Aminodov, who is the Nossi of Yehuda. Salmon, Boaz, yeah, from the names at the end of the list, then Oved, then Yishai, then David, Shlomo, then Shlomo's son Rechavon, whom Rabbi Kupon once described as a weak king. He was weak because he couldn't quite decide which way how to run the Malchus. Avia, Asa, Yehoshaphat, Yehoram, Achaziyahu, Yoash, Amatsia, Uziyahu, Yosan, Achaz, Chizkiyahu, Menashe, who's a big Russia, Amun, Yoshiyahu, Yehoachaz, Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, and then finally Tzidkiyahu. Now, and Tzidkiyahu, of course, lived at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the last of the Malchus Beis Yehuda up until Mashiach, who again would be descended along this line. Now, we have a pasuk which describes Malchus Beis Yehuda like the moon. I can't remember the pasuk, and I didn't write it down, I should have done. The Malchus of Yehuda is described in the pasuk as the moon. The Malchus of Peretz, the lineage of Peretz, is described like the moon, whereas Zerach is described like is compared to the sun. Zerach, as in shining, Mizrach, right? So Zerach, the Shemesh is the sun, shining, Zerach, and Peretz is compared to the moon. So the Malchus of David is compared to the moon. Why? Because it waxes and wanes. The whole lineage of David, of Malchus Beis Yehuda, had its ups and downs. Had its ups and downs. Some of them were great tzaddikim, some of them were great rishonim, and they really had its ups and downs. Rather like the moon waxes and wanes, and as it gets bigger and smaller every month, looks like it gets bigger and smaller every month. Yeah. So too with the Malchus of Yehuda. Now, Tzidkiyahu, if we count, this is all brought from Rabbeinu Bachai, if we go to Tzidkiyahu, counting from Peretz, counting from Peretz, where the Malchus of Light kicks off after Yehuda, counting from Peretz, Tzidkiyahu is number 29, Melech number 29. Or if you want to go back a generation to Yehuda, you count Tzidkiyahu as number 30. The point being that the lunar month, with its 29 or 30 days, that is the time when the moon is at its smallest, appearing its weakest. Tzidkiyahu is the time of the Chulban, the first place of Mikdash. That is a low point, hitting a real low point for Klal Yisrael. Similarly, says Rabbeinu Bachai, counting from Avraham as number one, if you go back to our founder Avraham, David is number 14, and his son Shlomo is number 15. That was the time when Klal Yisrael was at its strongest. They say that there was Torah or Gedulah b'makom echad. They had Torah, they had terrific knowledge of Torah, but they also had Gedulah. They had great, they were safe from their enemies. At the time of Shlomo Melech, there was no trouble from any of the enemies, certainly no battles were fought. And that was the time when Klal Yisrael was at the strongest. Middle of the lunar month, 14th to 15th, is when the moon is at its fullest. That's round moon in the sky, because that's when the moon looks at its fullest. So that represents the Malchus of Yehuda at its strongest, Tzidkiyahu at its weakest at the end. Also interesting to note, says Rabbeinu Bachai, it's not a Hasidic gematria, it comes from none other than Rabbeinu Bachai, that the word David has gematria 14. And he is the 14th from Avraham. Again, the representation of the strongest, the strong time. Something which I heard from Cheskel, my big brother, my wonderful brother Cheskel, on tape now, and Rabbi Kupa told it to Cheskel, that
What about the shape of the Mogin David? The Mogin David shape, where on earth does that come from? Have I told you this before?
I
heard it somewhere else. Well, I heard it from Rabbi Kupa. The Mogin David, the shield of David, the two interposed triangles, what's it got to do? Where's the connection to David? It's the symbol, it's on the Israeli flag. What's it got to do with David HaMelech? That the ancient Dalet was written in the shape of a triangle, as in a delta. The Greek letter delta is a triangular shape. Look up your old math books. So it's the shape of a triangle. The two main letters in the name of David are the two dalets. And it was the two dalets. The two dalets of David's name are the two main consonants in the name. So it's two interposed triangles. And that was David's signature.
Why
the one inverted? I don't know. If they're equilateral triangles, not really an inversion.
It's a high point and low point.
Oh, alright, maybe.
What did you hear?
Do you remember?
The Magen David is actually a triangle pointing downwards, and on top of it is a triangle pointing upwards to show that the powers of good, the at the top, will always be dominant on top of the powers of bad, which is pointing downwards. The upward one is always on top.
Very nice.
The Magen David wasn't his symbol.
It was his signature. It seems that was his signature. That's what Rabbi Kupa told Cheskel. That was his, or it's his signature. Maybe that's what he put on his signature, on documents, whatever. Everyone knew that to be his.
Interesting.
Yeah, amazing. So that's the little delta shape, two dollars.
Well, you should find documents that are going to share some of them.
The delta. The ancient Dalet was written like a triangle, and that was later incorporated into the Greek alphabet as a delta. Yeah? Right. Another idea brought by Rabbeinu Bachai is that David descended from, and all the kings descended from Peretz. Of those two twins, Peretz and Zerah, the word Peretz means to smash, or smash through, to break through. And he was called that because he was the one who pushed out of the mother first. And at the time of the birth, one that the babies put the hands out, Vayitan Yod, and the Mialedes, the midwife ties a string around to say, Zeyotzer Hashona, this is the firstborn. But, oh, you've got to share. Thank you. Zeyotzer Hashona. And then the Acha Yotzer Achid, then the other brother came out, that was the second one, came out. So the first one came out without the string, without the shoni, without the red string tied around his finger. So we say, you smashed your way through because the other child was in line to come out first, but the second one pushed his way through. And they called the name Peretz or Porets. So the idea.
They called
Peretz
the one with the string?
The one without the string.
First
one hand protruded, so it said, oh, Zeyas Hashanah, tied a string around it, so they should know that's the firstborn. Then the hand was withdrawn back into the mother, and then the other one string. So we say, oh, he's pushed his way through because he wasn't really first in line, but he came out first.
Sounds like he's learned the lesson from Yaakov.
Strangely similar.
He's got the Zachor.
Yeah.
He wants no complication this time.
That's right. No complication. That's it. So we say, there's a Maimon Chazal, a halacha, Melech Peretz Geder. A king is allowed to smash down a fence. What does that mean? What's that halacha all about? So there's machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam as to what the halacha means, and I can't remember which one says which, and I should have looked it up, and of course I didn't. One view is that I think this is Rashi's, but I'm not entirely sure, that a king, if he's taking his army on manoeuvres, he can smash his way through anybody's property in order to move his army into position. So you get a knock on the front door, and it's the king. He says, your house is in the way of my army, and you've got 20 seconds to clear the place because we're about to blow it up. And that's halacha. The king has a right to do that. According to the Rambam, he not only has a right to do it for army manoeuvres, he has a right to do it for anything he likes. He doesn't like your house, or he wants to build a park where your house is. That's it. Your house goes. Melech Peretz Geder. So in the name Peretz, you have a remez to the king, to the royalty, because the Peretz, he can smash his way through, exactly as the king is allowed to smash his way through. That's the Melech Peretz Geder. He can smash down anything he wants in order to to build or to do something or to take his army out. I mean, it was.
Is it on the land that finished for us?
Who did?
Zevel.
Izevel?
Took the land.
Oh, the vineyard from Novoyot. From, was it Novoyot? Novos, thank you. Yeah, Novos.
And finished the size of
the. Yeah, because there was a whole cooked up thing.
So the scheme was a scheme of the royal power.
Yeah. Maybe if they would have just taken it, they could have done that. But they didn't, they got him in trouble, they got him killed. They got him killed. Maybe that was the whole. They wanted that vineyard, they could have just taken that vineyard. Al Pi Alocha, yeah. Izevel probably couldn't have. Being a queen, but Achav could have done. Yeah. Whether this halacha applies to Malchus Yisrael, Achav is a king of Yisrael, not a king of Yehuda. So Melech Peretz Gedim might not count that. I don't know. Yeah. But Izevel, in any case, they got killed. So, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Okay, let's come on to discuss a little bit about the tzaras of Dovid's life. Okay, the tzaras of Dovid's life. I'll just jot down a few of them. So he suffered from Shaul, of course. The Plishtim were after him, after Dovid. They only wanted signs after Dovid, because after he'd killed their hero Goliath. So they were after him. And in fact, he was on the run from the Plishtim. He was also on the run from Shaul, and he was also on the run from his son Avshalom, when his son Avshalom rebelled. The story of Avshalom is very interesting because it ties in with Parshas Ki Tzetzeh. Avshalom's mother was called Ma'acha, and she was not born Jewish. David had six wives altogether. I can't remember. Michal, Merav, Avigail, Bathsheba, and Chagis. And we just mentioned Ma'acha. Those are the six wives. I think I've got them all right. The six wives of David. So Ma'acha was not actually born Jewish. Did you know this? She wasn't born Jewish. She was captured. She lives in a place called Geshur, and which is Plishti land, as far as I remember. No, it's not. No. I don't know where it is. She lives in a place called Geshur, and she was captured in battle. And we've got the halachos in the Kisitze about the Eisha Sifas Torah. There was captive. She's captured in war, and a soldier falls in love with her. The Torah says, "It's mutter, you're allowed to marry her." Got to go through the whole process of. You've learned this recently, haven't you? Yeah, I know you've asked that. That she has to shave her hair and either cut her nails according to one view or grow the nails long according to another view. Machlekes between Rashi and the Chizkuni, that she has to grow the nails long, dafka, to look ugly, or cut them very short, dafka, in order to look ugly. Different fashions. And then if after all of that you still want to marry her, because it doesn't take you to have the Torah's permission to marry her. But the next parasha after that is the parasha of the man with two wives, ha'achach ha'uvah, ha'achach sinuah, and how he has to do the machalah. And the parasha after that is the parasha of the Ben Sarah Moriah. And Rashi says it's a gradual process. Yes, the Torah gives you permission to marry her, but you won't have much machas from such a marriage. And you'll end up with the Ben Sarah Moriah born to that marriage. And this is exactly what happened with David and Ma'acha. Because Ma'acha was not Jewish. She was captured in battle. David fell in love with her. He went through the whole process, did a geirus, and she married David. Avshalom was the son, and Avshalom ended up rebelling against David. Avshalom, the whole parish of Shaul.
In the time of Shaul. In the time of Shaul.
Was Shaul still alive then?
What did you say? You're saying
it
was in the time of Shaul?
Did I say that? No, time of David. Avshalom.
Yeah, actually, but he was in time when
he
was on the
run for Shaul,
or
no. David ended up running away from his own son Avshalom.
Yes, I know that, but that was when he was king of Israel. When Shaul was gone.
I think so, Jim, I can't remember. Yes.
Not in the 7 years when he was on the
run. I think so. Oh, I'm not sure. Let's not say. Especially as being recorded. Yeah, I'm not sure. So Avshalom was out to kill his own father David, and then in the end Avshalom was killed by Yoav, who was David's nephew. Yoav was the son of Tzeruah, who was the sister of David. She had three sons, Asael, Yoav, and Avishai, and they all had very colourful lives, all tzaddikim. As far as I understand, all tzaddikim. Asael was killed by Avner in a battle, one of the battles between David's camp and Shaul's camp. Yoav later on
revenged the death of his brother Asuel by killing Avner. And Avishai died after David, according to one medrash. Avishai was a great, great tzaddik, and he died as a result of a plague after David carried out a census. David had said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me a test, I'll pass the test, give me a challenge, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's not, you don't know me to ask for challenges, and I'll give you a test that I guarantee you you'll fail, that every, even a child in Cheder would be able to pass. And the test was he wanted to carry out a census, and he carried out the whole census, and Yoav was in charge of carrying out the census, and Yoav did it very slowly and very reluctantly because he knew it was wrong. You have halacha. It's halacha, it's brought in the Gemara, it's in Yuma, and it's at the top of an Amud base. If you want to look it up, it's approximately Daf Kaf, or Kaf Aleph, or Kaf Beis, or Kaf Gimel. It's around there, it's at the top of the Amud base. It's fascinating Gemara, because the Gemara says you're not allowed to count people. And the Lashon of the Gemara is Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Osa Limnos Es Yisrael Afilu Lidbar Mitzvah. You can't count Klal Yisrael even for Mitzvah. And years ago I found in a Seamus box an old sefer that was so ripped to pieces, it was really unusable. It was in the Seamus box for good reason, it was really unusable. And I could look through it, and I found in there, and there's a wonderful vort. I can't remember the name of the sefer, it's the only thing I really learned from the sefer, that halacha has 10 words. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Osa Limnos Es Yisrael, Lilibit Var Mitzvah. You can't count class in 10. You can't count people even for mitzvah. Got 10 words, didn't it, for counting for minion. He says, that's it, you should use that halacha when you count people for minion. Yeah, nice idea. I always use that for counting. Then you lose out on an opportunity to say halacha. Yeah, it's nice, or pasuk, whatever it is.
This is a Shakespearean as well.
Is that? I prefer reviews. Yeah. Okay. So David had this good big Messiah to count Klal Yisrael. He did count them, and as a result of that, there was a big Magefah broke out, and thousands of Yidden died. And the Medrash says no, thousands of people did not die. It was really Avishai only who died. He was such a tzaddik. Avishai, the son of Tzuriah, sister of David, because he was such a tzaddik, therefore, it's considered as though thousands of people had died. He was keneged thousands of people. So that was the end of Avishai. And Yoav, the king Yoav, was the one who Yoav killed Avshalom. Yeah, in this battle, David said to Yoav, "Whatever you do in the battle, please, whatever you do, don't kill Avshalom. It's my son." And even though he was at war with his own father, David begged Yoav, "Please don't kill Avshalom." The first cousins, of course. He got caught by his hair, that's right, and Hashem was Mr. Universe. The Chazal say he had not a single blemish on his whole body. He was
honest.
Yeah, yeah, that's honest. A blemish means, good question, a blemish means something wrong, like not a single spot or cut, or there's nothing, he was extremely good looking. And he was a nazir, and he had his hair grown extremely long, and in the battle he was rising, he got caught in a tree and he couldn't escape, and then Yoav found him and they pierced him with spears, it looked like target practice on him, and they killed him. And Yoav comes back to David, good news, I've killed, the war's over, we've killed Avshalom. And Nabuch David was so broken by that, Bani, Avshalom, Bani, he cried, I asked you not to kill him, and you did, Anyway, so that was, and as a result of that, David later on had the death of his son Avshalom avenged via his own son Shlomo to get Yoav killed in the end. Oh, lots of names here. So Yoav killed his first cousin Avshalom, and then Shlomo engineered the death of his first cousin Yoav. Thank you. So, and before that, you have the other awful story. Nebuch again, David suffering through his own children, and that was the story of Amnon and Tamar, who were half brother and half sister. And Amnon was Ma'anes Tamar. He could have married them. He could have married Tamar. Al pi halacha, David says you could have married her, even though they were technically half brother and half sister. The mother of Tamar, and I hope I've got this right, the mother of Tamar was Ma'acha. That's right, this Ma'acha, who became a Gioras whilst pregnant with Tamar. That's right, whilst pregnant with Tamar. Therefore, Tamar was born technically not Jewish, and she too became a Gioras. Therefore, although there was a biological relationship between Amnon and Tamar, they were half brother and half sister, there was not a halachic relationship between them. Because we have a halacha that ger nisgaya kekotan shenem adami. If a non-Jew becomes a ger, they lose any halachic relationships. They're like a brand new child born, and they have a halachic relationship. Therefore, technically, Amnon could have married Tamar. And David says, if any would have asked, they would have allowed to give me a chance to marry her. Absalom and Tamar were full brother and full sister. The father was David, and mother was Macha, and Absalom killed Amnon as a result. So Nebuchadnezzar, and all this in the life of David, losing his son. Amnon, that's the kind of thing. Amnon killed Absalom. Sorry, wrong way around. Absalom killed Amnon. So that was. Put the beggars on inside, I used to get the lemon. Absalom killed Amnon, and then later on Yoav killed Absalom. And the fall of that, after when David married Bathsheba, again under what looked like dodgy circumstances, engineering the death of Bathsheba's first husband, Uriah Hachiti, even though the Gemara says it halachically is perfectly permissible, and Kala Omer David Chata in La Torah, anybody says that David sinned in this is wrong, he did not do any other in that, but it looked dodgy, and Nosson Hanavi gave David a big Musajasha for it, and basically that was where the start of David's big problems from all his children were. That's where it all started. Bathsheba had a son who was born, who died almost immediately upon birth, and they died at Avedis for him, of course, and Shlomo was the second son, whose real name was not really Shlomo, but really Yedidiah. And the name Yedidiah is actually similar to the name David, because they've both got the same roots, meaning friends, right? Yedidiah, David, Dodi, like Paul Dodi. Say? Which person can I? Oh yeah, and Kaelis as well, yeah. That's right, Kaelis meant David, yeah. Let's see. And even at the very end of David's life, when David was dying and knew he was dying, he had to face up to the power struggle between his own children, with Adoniyahu, the son of Haggis, the beginning of Melachim Aleph, wanting to take over the Melucha. And David had already promised the Melucha was going to get to Shlomo, and so he organized that Shlomo should be crowned there and then. And he was. But all that was another nachat tzara for David to have to face in his last few months on earth was knowing that his children were having a bit of a power struggle as to what would happen after his own death. David was in Hebron for 7.5 years. I've got 7.5 years here, and in Yerushalayim for 3 years. David fought all the battles of all the surrounding nations, wiped them all out. As a result of which, Shlomo enjoyed 40 years of shalom. And he never had to fight anything. But that was down to the preparatory work of David. One astounding thing about David, it's Pasuk in Melachim Aleph, chapter Yud Aleph, that when he fought in one particular battle against Amalek, it says there that while Yoav, who was the head of the army at that time, was busy leading the army into battle and killing all the enemies, David, what was David doing? Lekaber es hachalolim. He buried them. And this is an unbelievable magiga. Kved ames. David took time off to bury the enemies who had been killed. Yoav had killed them, or got them killed in their battles, and David said, no, we can't just leave the bodies strewn around, we have to bury them. Kved ames. And of all people, he's the melech who's going to do it. The melech, no, it's a posuk. Lekaber sechalalim. Melachim aleph, chant yudal posuk, test rov. Yeah, lekaber sechalalim. And David saw to the burial. Unbelievable madriga there.
Is there a relationship between the 40 years that David was king, 33 and 7.5,
yeah,
and the 40 years of Shlomo?
Very likely. I'm sure they're connected.
And the 40 years of the 40 days, rather.
Of the Mabul. Oh, yeah. I don't know. 40 years in the Midbar. Yeah. I don't know. There may well be. May well be. Let's see. a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sadi Beis on the base. The Gemara says that Nebuchadnezzar, I'm now honing in towards Tehillim, I've got this sort of grand project, maybe I should learn Tehillim, so maybe I won't manage to start Tehillim today, but it's an introduction. Nebuchadnezzar, when he saw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah survive the Kivshan Ha'ish, he threw them all into the fiery furnace, and when he saw them survive, he was about to burst into praise and song to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow, he didn't really like it. People surviving in Kivshan Ha'ish, he was going to give them, he was going to burst forth into song, and the songs he would have sung, says the Gemara, would have made David HaMelech's Tehillim pale into insignificance. He was going to sing such wonderful Megunim and praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even all the wonderful Tehillim, the 150 chapters of Tehillim that David wrote, would have been nothing in comparison to what Nebuchadnezzar was about to say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Nebuchadnezzar to express these praises, and so he sent a Malach who sort of gave him a tap on the mouth and silenced him. So of course the amazing thing is that Nebuchadnezzar is going to express such wonderful thoughts, even better maybe than David's own Tehillim. So I saw this in the introduction to Tehillim in the art scroll, Tehillim in English, I mean, two volumes of art scroll on Tehillim. So in the introduction he brings this Gemara, he says that the Kotzker Rebbe said on that, okay, so Nebuchadnezzar was going to express these wonderful Tehillim, and Nebuchadnezzar had a life of ease. David had the exact opposite. So to express these wonderful praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you're leading a life of Riley, that's Nebuchadnezzar. Anybody could do that. So Nebuchadnezzar could do it because he had a very easy life. David was able to do it, even though David had spent years on the run and he lost all his children and he had all these tzaris going on in his life. Nevertheless, he could express wonderful praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the gadlus of David. He was able to express these wonderful shvachim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite the fact that he had such a difficult life. We've got 150 chapters in Tehillim. We have, after chapter 72, the Pasuk says, it finishes off with the words, Kolu Tefillos David ben Yishai. That is the end of the praise of the Tefillos of David ben Yishai. So it looks from that David only wrote the first 72 chapters and no more. It seems to be a bit of a machlokas as to how many of them he actually wrote. The chapters of Tehillim were written by a minimum of 10 people, and Rashi, at the very beginning of Tehillim, brings them. I'm not going to see if I can remember them all. Well, I probably can't. Adam, David, of course, in no specific order. Moshe, Malki Tzedek. Oh, here, we'll start the list again. Here, Adam, Malki Tzedek, Avraham, Moshe, David, Shlomo, Asaph, and three sons of Korach. That gives one, two, three. Yes, so that gives you a total of 10. And Zemachluk is about one other character Rashi brings called Yedusun, whether he was a real person or not. At any rate, we have the Tehillim was shared out by these various individuals. Whether David alone wrote the first 72 and no more is subject to a bit of a machlokus there. Because you could say, well, Kolus Tefillos David ben Yishai, that was the end of them, he only wrote this first 72. Or you could say, no, that's the end of the Tefillos. The others are not necessarily considered Tefillos, they could be considered praises. Tefillah is a prayer, rather a bakosha, or he asked for something, as opposed to simply praises. At any rate, that's the... some of them we know were written by certain individuals. Mizmah Shili Yom HaShabbos was written by Adam HaRishon. Many of them, Lamasech Livnei Korach Mizmah, which is a before Tekiah Shofar, is of course written by the sons of Korach. But so exactly who wrote which ones, and some of them Mizmah Osaf, so we know that was written by Osaf. The notes, the Neginis in Tehillim, are a totally different system of notes to the rest of the Torah. And the rest of Tanakh, I should say. There are three Svarim in Tanakh which have their own specialist notes, and the Svarim are Iyov, Mishnah, and Tehillim. And they're taken by the Rosh HaTevas, Aleph, Mem, and Sof, MS. You see, Sifrei MS is a reference, it's just an abbreviation for Iyov, Mishnah, and Tehillim. They have a totally different setup of Neginus, and the normal phrases that exist in Tanakh do not necessarily apply, based on the Neginus, do not necessarily apply to these three Svarim. So for example, you have a Mercha Tipcha, which is a phrase, Mercha Tipcha, and they follow a phrase together. So Mercha begins the phrase and Tipcha closes the phrase, or like a small clause in a sentence, in a pasuk, does not apply to Tehillim. And very often, even an Esnachta in Tehillim is not the natural break in the pasuk. Now that I saw at the back of the Sefer of Rav Shimshon Feil Hirsch on Tehillim, he's got a few pages there where he describes all the notes. And it's right up my street, you know, I'm really interested in this, but I could hardly understand any of it. First of all, the notes have got different shapes, they've got different names, and they've got different phraseology techniques. And Rav Shimshon Feil Hirsch goes through every single one of them, explaining which ones are real pauses, which ones are not real pauses, and so on. But he's got a couple of pages at the back of the volume 2, I'll tell him. Okay, and that's it. So we've made a good start on chapter Aleph. Maybe I'll give you maybe another shell. We'll start.
When's the next one?
Oh, right, David reminded me. This is from now. You'll find this. It's in Hilchas Mila in the Torah Shulchan Aruch, and I think it's brought by the Beis Yosef. It's a very remote medrash. I first heard it from Rabbi Roberts, and then I looked it up. He said this at a bris, and I looked it up. That in times gone by, where a bris milah was what was used to cut for bris milah. To do bris milah, you can use any sharp object. They always used to use a stone.
Flint.
A flint stone, that's right. And you can prove it from the Torah itself. You can prove it from the Torah itself in Parsha Shmos, where it says, she took a tzor, which is a flint stone, to do the bris milah on her son. Which son was it? Was it Gershon or Eliezer? It's Machlekes. It's Machlekes, which son it was. When David was about to fight Goliath, he picked 5 stones in order to kill Goliath, but he was wearing a huge metal helmet, so the Pasuk calls it. In fact, it came up in this morning's Mishnah, Kasta, and I think the word Kasta is brought in the Pasuk there. It's in Shmuel Aleph chapter Yud Zayin, as I remember, and I think it's there. So he's wearing this helmet. So David was mispalel. If the metal helmet worn by Goliath will make way for the stone that I'm going to throw, then there will be some big zechus for the metal, that the metal should give way to the stone. By the laws of nature, the stone would just bounce off the metal helmet, but the metal helmet parted, allowing the stone to penetrate into Goliath's skull, and Goliath died as a result. And as a result of that, in the zechus of the metal giving way to stone, nowadays we always use a metal knife for the bismillah, the ismol. It's called an ismol. Aleph Zayin is Gematria 8. Mol, oz mol. Then he did bismillah, which is Aleph Zayin. And Goliath fell, and another mace in killing Goliath's misery. When Goliath died, he fell forwards, so that David wouldn't have such a long walk in order to chop off his head. To save David, the tzaddik, the trouble of walking those extra few meters. To kill Goliath, he fell forwards. It was not normal because the stone hit him on the head. He would have surely fallen backwards. But he didn't. He fell forwards. It's somewhere in Hilchas Mila. It's in the Tur, and it's in one of the Mefarshim on the Tur. It's either the Bach or the Beis Yosef on the Tur. It's in Hilchas Mila, as far as I remember.
Gershon, you speak in your wonderful shiur about David HaMelech and the enmity between David HaMelech and Shaul. And I think that the enmity existed mainly because Shaul wanted his son, Yonasan, to succeed him. And if you look in the Shmuel Aleph, in the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh, we will see that Kichol Hayomim Asher ben Yishai chai al ha'adamo lo sikon ato umalchusecho v'ato shalachno v'kacho sereilai ki ven mogesu. Now this was a plea for a father to his son whom he wanted to succeed him. It's a natural thing for a father, especially a king, that his own son should succeed him. But he could see that it wasn't his own son that would succeed him, but it was David Ben Yishai.